The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy. Zinc tablets solved a stinky feet problem. Question. When I was a child, I had sweaty feet. Taking off my shoes would clear the room. All through high school, I wore closed-toe sandals most of the year. In the 1970s, I worked in downtown Chicago and commuted by train from a western suburb. Most of the winter, snow or slush on the ground meant I had to wear galoshes to protect my shoes. Train cars were heated with vents at the floor level, so the floor was almost hot. Needless to say, my feet did sweat. The skin between my toes cracked and hurt. My toe pads were wrinkled and pure white, and of course my feet smelled bad. I tried a lot of fixes, such as foot powder and a nightly foot bath. Nothing helped. The dermatologist prescribed a foot bath with some kind of purple medication that stained the feet. It was absolutely no help either. Then I read in Prevention magazine that smelly feet with cracks between the toes and wrinkled white toe pads could be caused by a zinc deficiency. I started taking zinc tablets. Within the first day, the cracks between my toes closed up and the pads were no longer white or wrinkled. By the third day, the feet were completely cleared up. No sign of wrinkled white toes. The cracks completely healed and, as a bonus, no stinky feet. After about 2 weeks of zinc tablets, I began to notice a metallic taste in my mouth and decided it was time to stop taking the zinc tablets. That revelation came in the mid-1970s. Since then, whenever my feet begin to smell, I take zinc tablets for a couple of days. Answer, you are not the first person to tell us that systemic zinc may help control unpleasant odors. The National Institute of Health's Office of Dietary Supplements suggests a daily intake of 9 milligrams for women and 11 milligrams for men. The tolerable upper intake limit is 40 milligrams. Question. After I had surgery, the intensive care unit nurses gave me alcohol wipes to sniff for the nausea. It worked like a charm. When I was sent to another floor for my last day, I asked for the alcohol packets. The nurse on that floor asked in shock, "Why? Are you sniffing alcohol?" It's funny how nursing staff from one department are unaware of the simple practices another department uses to help their patients. I explained to her that the ICU nurses had recommended it. She still looked skeptical, but at least didn't remove the packets. I went home the next day with a few packets at the ready, but was hardly bothered by nausea by then. I now keep some in our home first aid kit. Drug recalls lead to poor blood pressure control. Question. I am very concerned about all the recalls of blood pressure pills. When Valsartan was first recalled, my doctor put me on Losartan. Before long, that was also recalled. In the meantime, my blood pressure was not well controlled. I'm back on Valsartan now, but I have no confidence that it is safe to take it. I can't afford the brand name Diovan because it's so expensive. I guess I have an unacceptable choice. Do I die from cancer or from a heart attack or stroke? Answer. Since July, millions of blood pressure pills have been recalled because of nitrosamine impurities. The drugs include Irbesartan, Losartan, and Valsartan. According to the Food and Drug Administration, the risk of cancer is very low, even though the recalled medicines have been contaminated with suspected carcinogens for 4 years or longer. That said, most people would prefer to avoid potential cancer-causing chemicals in their medications. A perspective published in the New England Journal of Medicine, March 13, 2019, points out that doctors may find it challenging to switch patients from one medication, such as Valsartan, to another, such as Losartan. The average retail price for a month's supply of brand name Diovan, 160 milligrams, is $320, according to GoodRx.com. That organization offers coupons that can lower the price to $260 a month. Canadian online pharmacies offer Diovan at around $45 for 4 weeks' supply. There have been no reports of contamination with this brand. You can learn more about Canadian online pharmacies in our e-guide to saving money on medicines available at www.peoplespharmacy.com. Question. I have been hearing about the importance of intestinal microbiota for our health. How do drugs such as Nexium affect these microbes that live in our digestive tracts over the long term? Answer. Investigators have found that acid-suppressing drugs such as esomeprazole or esomeprazole, Nexium, can alter the balance of bacteria in our digestive tracts, and that's cited in the Journal of Clinical Biochemistry and Nutrition, January 2018. Such changes may predispose people taking these proton pump inhibitors or PPI medications, including lansoprazole, omeprazole, and others, to intestinal infections with Clostridium or C. difficile. Some researchers believe that the effects of PPI are more prominent than the effects of antibiotics or other commonly used drugs, cited in Gut, May 2016. From the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, implanted heart devices, advances in technology. Your heart has its own electrical system that generates electrical signals and, when healthy, sends a precise impulse through the heart. This causes coordinated contractions of muscles in the heart's upper and lower chambers. The result is a steady heartbeat, usually around 60 to 100 beats a minute at rest, that pumps blood efficiently throughout the body. However, many factors can disrupt the heart's electrical system. In older adults, disruptions commonly lead to an unnaturally slowed heartbeat called bradycardia. When this happens, an important therapy choice is an implantable pacemaker that provides electrical signals to pace the heart. Today's pacemakers are incredibly high-tech and are continually evolving and improving. Among the recent developments is the increasing use of tiny wireless or leadless pacemakers that can be implanted inside the heart with no other leads or parts required. Bradycardia, slowed heart rate. A heartbeat begins with an electrical signal from the heart's natural pacemaker, the sinoatrial, or SA node. The SA node is located in the right upper chamber, the atrium of the heart. The signal from the SA node passes to the right and left atria, causing both to contract. This squeezes blood into the heart's two lower chambers, or ventricles. The electrical signals next converge at a grouping of cells called the atrioventricular node, or the AV node. This is the heart's junction box, and it stalls the signal for a split second, which allows the ventricles to fill with blood. The signal then follows electrical pathways to the right and left ventricles, causing them to contract and pump blood to the lungs and throughout the body. Bradycardia mainly occurs due to a dysfunction of the SA node, or due to a block of the AV node or the electrical pathways leading to the ventricles. Bradycardia doesn't always cause signs or symptoms, but when it does, they may include dizziness, lightheadedness, or fainting, shortness of breath, extreme fatigue, or confusion. Exercise or exertion may be difficult to tolerate. There are many causes of bradycardia. Some may be reversible or treatable, such as a side effect of a drug, an electrolyte imbalance, or a certain infection such as Lyme disease. Other causes aren't reversible, such as normal aging of heart muscle or damaged heart tissue from a heart attack, heart failure, or diseases of the heart muscle, such as cardiomyopathies. It may not be possible to discontinue a drug that slows the heart. If you're diagnosed with bradycardia and the cause isn't reversible, your doctor will look into a number of factors in deciding if a pacemaker would be appropriate. In general, if you have a confirmed abnormal heartbeat and an arrhythmia with symptoms, a pacemaker would likely help. However, some blocks of the AV node or the electrical pathways are serious enough to require a pacemaker even without symptoms. Other uses. In addition to treating bradycardia, pacemakers are used selectively with heart failure. With this, your heart's ability to pump blood becomes less efficient, with advanced heart failure, already diminished heart function, is sometimes worsened by an imprecise coordination of ventricle beats. A pacemaker can be used to restore normal coordination of electrical signals in both the atria and ventricles. This type of pacing is called cardiac resynchronization therapy and involves wires or leads attached to both ventricles in addition to a lead in the right atrium. Life-threatening arrhythmia is called ventricular fibrillation. An implantable cardioverter defibrillator, ICD, is a device that can shock or defibrillate the heart back to normal rhythm if ventricular fibrillation develops. Pacemakers and ICDs are commonly combined into one device. These devices are sometimes used in people with bradycardia or heart failure. More commonly, these devices are used in people with diseases that put them at high risk of ventricular fibrillation. Finally, fast atrium beats or atrial fibrillation that are difficult to control. Atrial fibrillation or treatment of it can affect the pacing of the ventricles, making the ventricles beat too slowly or too fast. A pacemaker can help restore pacing to that of a regular heartbeat. With a fast heartbeat, a last resort procedure for atrial fibrillation is to destroy the AV node so that fewer or no natural electrical signals pass between the atrium and the ventricles. A pacemaker is then used to restore normal heart rate. Under your skin, pacemakers perform two main functions: to monitor your heart rate and to send electrical impulses to restore normal heart rate should it slow or become uncoordinated. Virtually all newer pacemakers can sense increased exertion and adjust your heart rate to match your physical activity level. Pacemakers also monitor their own function, battery life, and other factors. This information can be retrieved at a doctor's visit or sent by cell phone or over the internet. Most pacemakers consist of a matchbook-sized pulse generator containing a battery and computer. This is typically implanted near the left collarbone with leads passed through a major vein into the heart and attached to specific spots on heart muscle. Most pacemakers for bradycardia have one or two leads. Pacemakers used for heart failure have three leads. Surgery to implant a pacemaker usually requires only sedatives rather than general anesthesia and numbing of the skin at the site of the placement. You usually stay in the hospital overnight to make sure the pacemaker is functioning properly. It takes about a month for scar tissue to form at the site of lead attachment, anchoring the lead to heart muscle. You'll have activity and movement restrictions during that time, but then you can typically return to a normal activity level after about a month with your doctor's okay. Leadless technology. An emerging trend with pacemakers is implantation of leadless pacemakers. A leadless pacemaker is about the size of a vitamin pill and is placed fully inside the heart. Leadless pacemakers share many of the features and functions of other pacemakers, but leadless devices don't require implantation of a pulse generator near the collarbone or leads. Leadless pacemakers are being used in people who require pacing in the right ventricle, offering an alternative to a traditional pacemaker with one lead and no ICD function, which has been used mainly for people who have both atrial fibrillation and bradycardia. The key benefit of leadless pacemakers is the elimination of the pulse generator and leads, which are sources of post-implant complications. Though fairly uncommon, complications can include infection, vein blockage by a clot, lead malfunction, or injury to a heart valve. Leadless pacemakers can usually be retrieved and removed more easily if a problem arises. Leadless pacemakers appear to be effective and safe based on short-term studies. However, research is needed to establish long-term effectiveness. Researchers are working to make the leadless technology available to more people by developing systems for multi-chamber pacing and cardiac resynchronization therapy. Two for one. A long-term problem with pacing only the right ventricle is the risk of pacemaker-induced heart failure. When pacing the right ventricle, the electrical impulse travels through the heart muscle, and there's a very slight delay between the contraction of the right ventricle and the left ventricle. This forces the left ventricle to work harder than it normally would, increasing the heart's pumping efficiency and increasing the risk of heart failure. An emerging therapy is showing promise for reducing this risk. It involves placing a single pacemaker lead at a spot where a bundle of heart electrical pathways, or bundle of HIS, emerges from the AV node before the pathways split to the right or left ventricles. Pacing the ventricles at this spot provides a more normal heartbeat. Bundle of HIS pacing is being performed, but so far only in a limited way. Doctors are working to make lead placement easier and more reliable. Long-term research is needed to fully map out who would benefit most. Health tips. Life with a pacemaker. Pacemaker technology is dependable, but there are precautions you need to take, including, number one, checking with your doctor about vigorous activity. About 4 weeks after implantation, your doctor will likely give you the okay to resume normal activities. While exercise is encouraged, ask your doctor before starting a vigorous program or sport. Avoid activities that may involve jarring impact. Number two, keeping your card handy. You'll be issued a card containing information related to your pacemaker. Keep the card with you at all times. It can be vital in case of an emergency and can help resolve problems at security checkpoints. And number three, being aware of electrical or magnetic interference. While unlikely, this can affect pacemaker function. It's okay to stand next to a running engine or use household appliances. Stay a few feet back from equipment such as arc welders, high voltage transformers, or motor generators. Walk at normal speed through store security detectors or airport screening, though your device may trigger the alarm. Avoid lingering near security scanners. If airport personnel are using handheld metal detectors, ask them not to hold the device near your pacemaker or request a pat-down. Cell phone use is fine, but don't keep the phone in a breast pocket while it's turned on. Let medical teams know that you have a pacemaker. Certain tests or treatments may need to be done carefully or not at all. Antibiotics, use them responsibly. If you seek out an antibiotic at the first sign of infection, you're not alone. But you may not be aware of the risks of unnecessary antibiotic use, including the growing threat of antibiotic resistance. Here's a closer look at situations in which antibiotics may help and those in which they may harm. Benefits and risks. Penicillin and other antibiotics have saved millions of lives by making once fatal infections treatable. But antibiotics carry risks that must be weighed against the benefits, and the risks include: number one, allergic reaction. A mild reaction may result in a skin rash and itching. A severe reaction, or anaphylaxis, is a medical emergency that involves swelling at the throat and breathing problems. Next, drug interaction. When antibiotics interact with certain drugs, the effectiveness of the drugs or the antibiotic may be affected, or side effects may occur. And then finally, infection. Antibiotics can increase your risk of certain types of infections due to the disruption of the normal, healthy bacteria in your gastrointestinal system. If you've recently taken an antibiotic, you're more at risk of developing a bacterial foodborne illness, infections caused by Clostridium difficile, bacteria which can cause severe diarrhea, are much more likely if you're taking or recently have taken an antibiotic. You're also at increased risk of a fungal infection, such as a vaginal yeast infection, or an infection of the mouth and throat called thrush. The reality of resistance. Another serious risk of antibiotic use is that bacteria may develop resistance to the drug. When this happens, the resistance bacteria aren't killed and can regrow in a stronger population. Because antibiotic resistance continues to expand, illnesses that were once curable with common antibiotics are becoming more difficult to treat. These illnesses lead to higher medical costs, prolonged hospital stays, and increased risk of serious complications and death. Resistant strains of bacteria such as Salmonella in the food supply can cause foodborne illnesses and lead to more severe health outcomes than do non-resistant infections. Antibiotic resistance is a global problem. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that each year, antibiotic resistance bacteria cause more than 2 million illnesses and about 23,000 deaths in the United States alone. New classes of antibiotics are in development that may be used to treat resistant strains of bacteria. However, the availability of these new antibiotic agents is limited, and they may be less effective against the most dangerous forms of resistant bacteria. Recently, the World Health Organization developed a priority list of antibiotic-resistant bacteria to guide researchers and drug developers in focusing their efforts. The benefits of antibiotics often outweigh the risks if a serious infection, such as pneumonia, or an extreme response to an infection, such as sepsis, is involved. Antibiotics are useful in treating certain infections that are likely to spread, including tuberculosis, whooping cough, and many sexually transmitted infections. Antibiotics are also recommended, or also often recommended, when you're at high risk of developing an infection, such as when undergoing surgery, receiving chemotherapy, or undergoing dialysis for end-stage kidney disease. When antibiotics aren't best, it's estimated that 30% of antibiotic prescriptions in the United States are unnecessary. Antibiotics don't work on viral infections, including colds, the flu, or bronchitis, although a separate class of drugs called antivirals can help with the flu if started early in its course. And that's an example, that's Tamiflu. Contrary to popular belief, thick, yellow, or greenish mucus isn't a sign of bacterial infection. At the same time, not every bacterial infection requires an antibiotic. Many sinus infections and some ear infections are viral, but even those that are bacterial will often clear up on their own. Before insisting on an antibiotic, ask your doctor the nature of the infection. If an antibiotic isn't the right choice, your doctor can recommend other ways to relieve symptoms while your body fights the infection. Antibiotic stewardship. By altering antibiotic use, the goal is to improve health and safety on a broad scale. This is known as antibiotic stewardship. Many of the steps needed to effectively manage antibiotic use are the responsibility of healthcare professionals. Farmers and other food producers also need to take steps to minimize antibiotic use. By being aware of the risks and limitations of antibiotics and practicing responsible antibiotic use, you can ensure the best outcome for you, your loved ones, and others. What can you do to practice safe antibiotic use? Here are a few key suggestions to consider. Talk to your doctor about when antibiotics will and won't help. Ask about antibiotic resistance. Ask what side effects might occur. Take antibiotics only when prescribed and exactly as prescribed. Finish the entire course of the antibiotic. Don't save it for later use or share the drug with someone else. Report side effects from an antibiotic, especially severe diarrhea, as they may require immediate treatment. Talk to your doctor about ways to relieve your symptoms in lieu of antibiotic therapy. Don't acquire antibiotics without a prescription. This includes online purchases and purchases made in foreign countries. Stay healthy and keep others healthy by washing hands, covering coughs, staying home when sick, and getting recommended vaccinations. Handle food safely, including cooking meats thoroughly and washing produce before eating. So determining when an antibiotic is appropriate, and I'll define the condition, the cause, and will an antibiotic help. The condition, culture-proven strep throat. The cause is bacterial. An antibiotic will help? Yes. Urinary tract infection. The cause is bacterial. Will an antibiotic help? Yes. Whooping cough or pertussis. The cause is bacterial. Will an antibiotic help? Yes. Middle ear infection. Could be bacterial or viral. Will an antibiotic help? Possibly. Sinus infection. It could be bacterial or viral. Will an antibiotic help? Possibly. Bronchitis. It could be bacterial or viral. Will an antibiotic help? Rarely. Common cold. The cause is viral. Will an antibiotic help? No. Influenza or flu is viral. Will an antibiotic help? No. And then finally, non-strep sore throat. Is viral? Will an antibiotic help? No. Sex after a heart attack, often not discussed. After surviving a heart attack, many people appropriately focus on the fundamentals such as changing eating habits, managing or improving fitness, losing excess weight, or managing mental health. It's easy to forget to ask or to be reluctant to ask about a safe return to sexual activity. One study of adults ages 18 to 55 who survived a heart attack found that fewer than 20% had a discussion with their heart doctor about this topic. For men and women with cardiovascular disease, no matter how young or old, sexual activity can be an important quality of life. Getting the facts can help you safely return to intimacy as you feel ready. The green light. Sexual activity may be less physically taxing to your heart than you think. Heart rate and blood pressure certainly do increase, but the physical demand is comparable to climbing two flights of stairs or jogging slowly. This is in part why less than 1% of heart attacks occur during sexual activity. In fact, poor fitness and a sedentary lifestyle are greater risk factors for a heart attack during sex than is a prior history of a heart attack. Each situation is unique, but you can anticipate the following as you work with your doctor to determine a safe time to resume sex. Allow time to stabilize. It may be possible to resume sex in just a few days if you're otherwise healthy and complete blood flow has been restored to your heart with angioplasty and stenting. However, it's more common to wait at least 1 to 4 weeks to permit time for heart medications to be optimized, to start cardiac rehabilitation, and to begin treating other heart disease risk factors. If you had open chest coronary artery bypass surgery, sexual activity is generally not recommended for 6 to 8 weeks so that the breastbone or the sternum has time to heal. Even then, for a few months, you'll want to avoid positions that put stress on the sternum. Making sure you're able to pass an exercise stress test. This evaluates how your heart performs during mild to moderate activity. During the exercise test, you shouldn't experience signs and symptoms such as chest pain, excessive breathlessness, abnormal heart rhythms, or decreased blood pressure, which can indicate increased stress on the heart. Even if you pass the test, ask the doctor if it's reasonable to resume sexual activity. Starting a cardiac rehab program includes changing eating habits, improving fitness, losing excess weight, managing mental health, and other steps. Taking a longer time to stabilize if you have ongoing risks. Resuming sex may not be advised if you have uncontrolled heart rhythm problems, heart failure symptoms, or uncontrolled risk factors such as high blood pressure, or if you are unable to pass a stress test. Heeding important cautions such as erectile dysfunction drugs can be safely prescribed with stable cardiovascular disease. However, they shouldn't be used in combination with nitrates. And overcoming barriers are important. And talking to your doctor about drug interference. So, we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138. And stay healthy.